Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, Broadway actor and founder of True Kings Academy, Seth Stewart.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Raymond Patterson. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am excited about tonight's show for many reasons. I think you will come to know a few of them as we go through the show. And to start off with, our guest had me at his introduction. In the book, in the introduction, in the very first page, in the very first paragraph, he writes, "I was going to write this book anonymously as I was worried about being judged by family, friends, peers, and even others who haven't met me. It took me many years to move past those fears. And I pray that sharing my story will allow others to be open to new possibilities and be at peace with their own experiences." Brilliant. He, of course, is saying a lot here. And he is kind of being specific about writing a book. I mean, he's being very specific about writing this book and putting himself out there in this book, for sure. But the way I felt it, and the way I took it, at least, whether this was his experience or not, this is what I got out of it. That in a sense, I extrapolated into all of us. Not all of us write a book or a movie or make videos or get on stage and do something in front of people or have a radio show. Not all of us do that. But all of us wake up in the morning and we all go out into the stage of our world. Whether that's a big world, like an executive or some kind of leader, or a small world, or a smaller world, I should say, that's seemingly smaller, it's big to us, but where we face other fellow employees or face other moms or dads, for example. And I wonder how many of us are facing that world in that moment, wondering about being judged by family, friends, and peers. Every single day, if not every moment of every single day. And I thought this is also brilliant because along with all the amazing stories and experiences and learnings that we can get from our guest, from his onstage experience and leading up to his in the jungle experience and leading up to, and then of course everything since, that we also get a sense of an evolution, an opportunity to show up in our lives and to learn from somebody who has actually, both of our guests, and we'll get into this, our guests and our performance guests, who anybody who's a performer, and especially to have gotten to the levels that they have gotten to, and that they not only have to show up once they get there, but they have to show up each step of the way. And I mean each step of the way. I don't know how much we'll get into that when we get an opportunity to have this conversation, but our guest poses such a big conversation that, you know what, I should just stop here and let's just get started because I can't wait. Title says it all. It's inspired, of course, by his book and his journey, Life Transformation, Spiritual Journey from the Largest Stages in the World to the Depths of the Jungle, and I should say, and beyond. And the beyond, we don't even know yet. How exciting, what lies ahead. For the moment, what lies ahead is this great interview with our guest. This is our Life Changes Show episode 863. He's, among other things, a Broadway actor. He's a performer. He's a spiritual guide. He's an author. He's a speaker and founder of True Kings Academy. Looking forward to talking about that too. Seth Stewart, welcome to the Life Changer Show.
Thank you for having me.
It's such a pleasure. And it's great to get to know you through your book and to talk with you a little bit. And I have this feeling like, oh my gosh, so much is gonna come through you and already is. I almost don't even know where to start, but before I move on, did you have a comment I feel you might have wanted to make about that monologue?
Great monologue, great intro.
Great start. Well, thank you. But I meant as it relates to you.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to explore, and I think that that's what life is about. And, you know, I mean, there's so many life changes. It's all about exploration and evolution. So I'm ready to get into it.
So every day you got up, you had to tell yourself that this is the day that someone's going to see you, or someone's going to, as a performer, I'm going to get this audition. Even though the odds many times were against you, or 1,000 people show up or more, as we'll talk about, and they're only going to pick one or a handful, what kept you going?
My love and my passion for the performing arts. You know, when you truly love something, I believe in unconditional love. It doesn't matter how long it takes, and it doesn't really matter how hard it is, because it doesn't seem hard. You love it. And it's one of the reasons I wrote my book. I want people to find their passions. I want people to find their visions again. And one of the things that I could do, you know, I don't remember where I heard it, but somebody says, you know, don't complain about anything in the world if you're not willing to change it, or, you know, kind of help. And so that was part of my reasoning for writing my book, Follow Your Vision, Live Your Truth, is I felt like sharing my passions and doing whatever it takes to reach them through all the ups and downs and changes would maybe inspire even just a couple people or more. And the journey I went on through my life would maybe inspire others to share their story, or to not be afraid of their story amongst their friends, families, or, you know, their peers, to just live their authentic truth.
You know, I was thinking of you as I was going through your book. You played football. So in the world of football, you probably couldn't talk much about, oh, I like to dance in musicals. And in the world of musicals, mm-hmm. you probably couldn't talk much about, you know, as an example, those two worlds. How did you
navigate that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I grew up mixed race. My father was black, my mother was white. They, you know, started dating in the, you know, 70s, and I played football and I was into dance. So I kind of really started off life as trying to understand, where do I fit in? That was a big part of my life's lesson.
And wait, I didn't even think about the mixed race thing. So that was a fit in thing at the moment too, at
yes.
that moment. Oh my
Especially
gosh.
Especially in the 80s, because it wasn't as, I mean, it was common, but not really as common as it is today.
Wow.
So it kind of gave me a perspective of, I think my viewpoint in life, from being mixed race to football to dance, you know, in football, they knew I danced, and they could make fun of me, but I, you know, I play defense, so I hit people on the field. So, but you know, my football coach knew I loved to dance, and there's a quote from him. It's so funny. I just went back and gave him a book and showed him his quote, and he kind of teared up. I said, he gave me the quote. He knew I loved to dance. He said, you know, if you love something and people make fun of you, you have to have a short memory and a thick skin, which really taught me in my teens to, you know, people are going to say stuff, just have a short memory, just forget about it and have a thick skin. And that one saying stuck with me my entire life up until today. And then, you know, in dance, people were kind of accepting, except maybe when I came from football practice and smelled like a locker room, and then I had to go dance. But, you know, other than that, I had to learn to take things with a grain of salt. I think we all get made fun of, but I started to build up that thick skin, which I think gave me the resilience going on into my career to be like, you know, you're going to get a lot of no's and you only need a couple yeses. That built the resilience, but that duality that I experienced from a young child and my passions that I had, it kind of put me in a chameleon space where I could kind of go between two worlds. And then I really had to start to, I kind of naturally saw between the lines of what is the common denominator to why the world is the way it is, why people argue, why this, why that. I could see between the lines because I was in between the lines.
And so you're in many worlds, sometimes all at once, and you're navigating from one to the other, and that's a skill or something.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, I think it has to be, I think it's something that it's just kind of comes upon you and it either gets you or it doesn't. And I think I had fun with it by the time I was in high school because I knew I was going to get made fun of. And then by that point, I'd been made fun of so much, I just didn't even care anymore. I was like, I love what I need to, what I love to do. And, but it put me in an observer space, in a witness point of view that has stuck with me my entire life. And I am so grateful for that point of view because I'm not biased to really too many things.
You loved it so much, you believed in something so much that you would even be homeless if you had to. And it's not because you didn't want to work, you worked really hard, but you actually became homeless.
Correct. Yeah, I went to school in New York City and we weren't allowed to audition for outside shows at the time. And I told him, I was like, I still just want to try. I want to audition. And they wouldn't let me. And so that was one of my first biggest kind of life changes, biggest shifts in my life is I said, well, you know what? If I can't do it, I'm going to do it anyways because something about it is calling me. And I dropped out of school and I didn't tell my family. And I was living on the streets of New York City. Sometimes I was 50% between living on the streets and like, you know, crashing in an abandoned building in the Lower East Side before they built up what it is now. But to me, I was having fun in some nights, you know, because my friends were, you know, I was partying. I was 19, you know, years old and I was living in New York City. So, you know, I'd be crashing with a bunch of punk rockers one night and then be, you know, sometimes if I couldn't find a place to sleep, I'd just sleep on the street and in Central Park. I knew some places in Central Park or abandoned buildings. So it wasn't really fun all the time because I do remember being hungry quite a bit, but you know, I was also dancing on the subways to just kind of collect money. So I found ways or tap dancing in Times Square before you needed a permit. You know, so I found ways to kind of make money, and that was about for 8, 9 months. And then my first, you know, big audition, you know, my first audition for a recording artist over time ended up happening. And I went on one of the biggest tours with Madonna by the time I was 20 years old. Yeah.
I was thinking, how do you not let that get to your head? Like, see, I told you so, and I knew who I was, and now I'm gonna party in a whole different way.
Yeah. I don't think it got to my head because I barely made it, number one. And number two, it didn't go to my head because I was in such gratitude. Like I wasn't a huge fan, but when I started to see her work ethic and the work ethic of others around me, you couldn't let it go to your head. Like you were one of many, and the bar was raised to where I wanted to meet it. So it didn't get to my head because I had so much work to do. And I wanted to be just as good as everybody else. I didn't want to be the weak link, so I didn't let it get to my head.
Wow, that's a big learning right there. That, like, a lot of people wouldn't know that. A lot of people would say, "Oh, I wish I could be Madonna. Like, I could be better than her." But you just right there just said something that most people actually can't live up to, or they don't know that they need to in order to be that or there.
Yeah, I mean, because you have her, she sets the precedent. She's one of the hardest working people in show business. I mean, people may not like her for all the things, but she's one of the hardest working people, excuse me, in show business and been doing it since the 80s. You got to give respect where it's due. But not only that, her costume designers are the best. Her set designers are the best. The other dancers and performers, they're great. And so I'm like, well, if I'm in this room, I have to make sure that I am not the weakest link. So you can't let it go to your head. It's the same in sports. A lot of people are big in high school and college, but when you get up to the pros, there's a whole nother level that you don't even, you can't, you can't even fathom it. You can't even fathom it. So anytime I've had success in my career, I stayed humble because I feel like I had a certain amount of work to do to meet the bar or raise the bar in the room if I was a veteran,
And in a sense, it's what you wanted, so do it. Enjoy it, right? In a sense. So you had the opportunity to have those moments for years, actually, because let's fast forward to you auditioning for some brand new Broadway shows, which got huge recognition.
I did In the Heights in Hamilton, and it was sort of the same thing when I did In the Heights. When we went to Broadway, I had a huge billboard in Times Square, and it
Oh, I
was in the
love that
best.
story where
Yeah, I called my
we'll
mom
leave it.
crying.
I love
Yeah,
that
I called my mom crying, but as I'll share that touch of that
Okay,
story.
okay.
But again, when I saw it, I went in my mind, or I think people would say, "Oh, I made it." I literally went, "Oh crap! Now I really have to be as good as they think I'm going to be when they come to see us, and not just me, but like the show." There's that's an expectation. And same for Hamilton. We had built up all this excitement even when we were off Broadway. And so by the time we got to Broadway, it's like, not only do we have to match what they think it's going to be, we have to make it better than they think it's going to be. And I think we did.
Wow. And so while you're standing up on stage and all of that experience behind you to get to, because I forgot about the, you did the off-Broadway too. So basically, you are part of the team that helped mold the show that went to Broadway. That's how that works, I think. So
Correct.
now you're standing on stage and you did all that. And of course, you've got thousands of shows ahead of you, we hope, right? But what does that feel like?
sometimes the business of things isn't always fun, but the stage is a sanctuary. And so when you're on stage, two of the most places, there's two or three places I'm really most comfortable in my life. On the stage, in the forest, and with like people I love. And that's it. All the in-between time, I don't know what to do with myself. podcasts I'm good at, but regular banter with people, I don't know how to do it. So how it felt was like how it feels like when I'm in nature. Like if I'm hiking, I'm like, I hear my higher voice say, this is where I belong. When I'm on stage, I hear my higher voice say, this is where I belong. And so I just kind of follow that higher voice.
Well, it sounds like your book, Follow Your Vision. All right. So let's talk about the jungle. What led you to the jungle?
Yeah, I when I did my second Broadway show, I kind of burned myself out. I was building another business while doing a show at night. And I never really had time for friends, even in high school. I mean, I had time for friends, but I was either in football practice, choir rehearsal, or dance classes. And even summer breaks, I would be at, a workshop or a convention or just working a job to pay for more classes. And I think I left my second Broadway show when I was 20. 5 or 26, I think it's 26. And I just kind of burnt out from the industry. And so I went and interned for 6 months at a primitive skills school where we were living outside, making primitive shelters, helping teach classes to like 100-person classes. It was a barefoot all the time. It was amazing. We were cooking for them and learning, ancient Native American philosophies. And I loved it. I loved it. And I didn't know how much I would love it. And it just brought It's kind of like the arts. It brought so many unique people together, like nature and, different types of retreats. They bring so many unique people. And so I felt at home. But when I did Hamilton, which was years later, I got a call from my higher self, from God, that, I knew it was going to be my last Broadway show and that I was going to be called
Oh.
out into the world. And I would just literally, all I knew is I'd have to follow my heart. That's it. And I got that call backstage. I took over the role of Jefferson Lafayette, which was a Tony-winning role from David Diggs.
Yeah.
I had about 3 months left, and I got that call, sweating my face off before I went on for another number. And I said, okay, that's what it's going to be. So
Wait,
it's
on the during the show?
during the show backstage, I was in between numbers, sweating my face off, full costume. And it
Okay.
was like the world around me just stopped.
Wow.
I don't even know how I got back on stage on time, but it was like a break in reality, which has happened to me before. And that's how I knew it was real. And all of a sudden, I just kind of heard, felt that voice. And the music of the stage came back in. I took a sip of water and went right back on stage. And I knew that I was going to be done. And I took a 7-year journey back into the jungles of Peru, back into the mountains of, all over this country. And I just followed my heart wherever I went and started writing this book in the meantime.
So talk about follow your vision. So the book is Follow Your Vision, Live Your Truth, A Seeker's Journey to Make Sense of Life and Find Oneness with the Universe. Seth Stewart, our guest. So Seth, we were talking earlier before the show how you were homeless, and I hate to keep bringing that up, but the
Okay.
connection here is that you then went and lived without a home in the forest. And my first take was like, well, now he's homeless again. And then I thought, oh, wait, no. And then you said, or I,
I'm home.
yes.
I was at home. And here's a funny thing too, which is why I'm not offended in the least, is, when I was homeless in New York City, I was without a home at the time, but I had a vision. And I couldn't have said it at 19, 20 years old that that's what it was, but I was still auditioning every day, still reading we still had newspapers, reading the newspaper when other auditions would come up, or where I could find other work. But I still, so I wasn't homeless and lost. I was homeless with a vision, and unfortunately, you could only live in the dorms for free so long before they catch you. So I still had a vision, but when I went after the show and I was journeying, I purchased some property and was living in my tent for a whole year, trying to figure out where I was going to build my cabin because I was listening to the land. And again, I was
Wow.
without a quote unquote home, but I was in heaven. And home was nature. I can hear nature. I can hear Mother Earth. She does have a voice. She does talk to us in English or whatever language we're from. She is the face of every woman, of across all continents. Like, she will appear to you and talk to you in whatever language. Like, and I've heard others say this as well. And the first time I heard her was in 2010 during a sweat lodge. But then in 2017, when I actually bought my property, was starting to caretake it, she said, "Welcome home." And so I was without a home, but I was home is everywhere. That's what she taught me. Home is wherever you travel. Mother Nature, she provides food. She provides song through her birds, through her coyotes, through the owls. We have everything we need. And so it taught me, oh, I'm really home now. And that was beautiful.
Who applauds you when you're home, home?
That's a great question. I wrote in my book, "Where I'm going, there's no applause." And that was right before, that is right after I had just purchased my property, and I was getting ready to go into the woods. And that was the thought that kept coming up. Where I'm going, deep in the forest, there's no applause. And I kind of found sanctuary in that. I kind of found relief in a weird way. Because you don't have to put on a show. Not that I put on a show or put on a mask in my day to day. I'm real. But It's you in the forest. That means all your beautiful, all your beauty, all your shadow, all your ugliness, all your impatience, all nature's going to do is just reflect it back to you. So there's and if and when you get over the things that you, the shadow aspects that you didn't realize you have, no one's going to applaud you. The trees aren't going to say anything. The birds aren't going to say anything. That's for you. So there is no applause out there, but that is where, after 7 years, is where I learned about myself and others more than I could have in different, and if I was not there.
Well, if you survive, then you know you've done a pretty good job. And you know that word survival, and I think we're going to get into it a little bit here, but what you were doing from the football world to the dance world, just as an example, and actually the mixed cultural world, that you were learning survival skills of a certain kind, actually, and using them in the different worlds. Well, here you've learned other kinds of survival skills, and now feels like you're bringing them all together to help people, and maybe even men specifically, where we might not know that we even need them, much else know to learn them.
Yes. I think there's multiple words for it. I definitely think survival is one of them. I try to look at it in a way of I've shifted my wording with it a little bit to where it's adaptability. I think the reason we're having such a hard time in the world right now is the ability to adapt and the willingness to adapt. And having lived in nature so long, there is such a thing as a survival of the fittest. If there is a puppy of a coyote that has a hurt leg, the mother has to leave it and take her other puppies, pups with her. If a bear cub is hurt or disformed, the mother cub has to take the mother bear has to take the other cubs, and she has to walk on. It's survival of the fittest. It's about the betterment of the whole. I think as humanity, from what I've observed, is that if we don't embrace the adaptability, or we can't adapt, we can't evolve, and we can't survive. So I think survival is one aspect, but we don't have to be in survival mode if we are open to adapt to whatever changes we have in our life, or what is being called of us to evolve, even as painful or as scary as it might seem. And so I think what I share in my book is that I've had adaptability skills from all these different aspects that I want to share with people. And if anything, it allows you to have different experiences because you're willing to put yourself in different environments. And life is so much more fun that way if you have that adaptability. And so I think as we evolve as humanity, because we are evolving, some are devolving, but in order to evolve, without it being so painful, we have to be open to adaptability.
So you're listening to nature, and it's telling you where to build the cabin, for example. Are you feeling like you're listening to humanity, and a certain part of humanity is saying, "Help us with these skills that you've learned," and what are those?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like when I was before I built my cabin, I realized I needed to slow down because there was other animals on within the land, and I recognized that I was a visitor, right? I was able to build my home, and when I say I'm talking to the land, I'm verbally saying, "Hey, show me where to build my cabin where I'm not being intrusive to the rest of the environment, where I'm not being intrusive to the deer or where the rabbits might nest or where the even on a spiritual level, there's certain places on the lands that have high spiritual activity. It could be negative, it could be positive. But I took my time for a full summer and fall seasons to pay attention. I also got to learn when it rained really heavy, where the rainfall went off. And I started to get and see an idea on the land where the best place to build. And by listening to the land and taking my time, it was the best place to build. And that is a skill with how I think what we can do for humanity. with humanity. I think if we have enough patience to get internal, to just ask questions, even if, let's say, even for instance, of if you should move, right? If you keep praying on it, or you keep meditating on it, or you keep asking the question, and you listen beyond your mind, like you're not thinking of all the equations. It's hard to do, but if you drop into your heart, then things synchronistically appear in your life. Like you might drive and start seeing Arizona plates all over. That's your intuition. That's the universe guiding you to where you might want to move to. And then you can ask the universe to get more specific. Okay, where in Arizona? And you might hear a song about, you know, I don't know, one of the major cities, right? And I think we have to come back to learning intuitive listening, or, you know, clairvoyant skills, because there is such an overlay with technology, and our greatest skill, our greatest technology as humans is intuition, is telepathic communication, is clairvoyance, clairaudience. All of us have these skills, but none of us take the time to really develop, because it's not really there for, you know, it's not a mainstream thing. But any native culture to any land, they had these skills because they had to know where the predators were, where the deer was. They had to have this intuitive listening, this intuitive talk when they were on the hunt, because they couldn't use words. I've noticed when you develop these skills, especially for empaths, you don't need as many words. You don't need as much conversation. Wow. It's all energetic. And I think that we need to get that energetic communication and listening back.
Well, we could have done this without words for sure, but thank you for bringing the words on. And so tell us about the Academy.
Yeah, so True Kings Academy is, I was asking where I could help in the world. And I was asking God where I could help in the world. And I don't view, you know, God is guy in the sky, but I believe in a creator. I believe in a great mystery. And if you ask, you shall receive. And over time, I kept hearing the men need help. The men need help. And that the women were already doing their work. And it's kind of true, because any healing circle or retreats I'd go on, it'd be mostly women and maybe two guys. Mm. And that's all over the world. Mm. And so I said, oh, we're the ones lacking. We're the ones that have to catch up. So not only was I hearing it in my prayers, my meditations, I as I went back to remember, I realized we were not even 5%, 3% within these healing spaces. So I took all the knowledge from my primitive skills, my life skills. I'm, you know, I taught dance. So I took everything that I have, all my spiritual skills of everything that I've studied. And I would pray on it. I would say, what's needed? What of this is needed? And I created a course, and I do one-on-one coaching with men to help them step into their divine masculine. And the difference of a divine masculine, a divine male, is that they're in their heart, and we have a throne in our heart. And we have divinity, which means that we are connected to God, and are following a higher calling beyond ourselves. You know, we're here to shift that energetic vibration of being protectors, of being listeners, of being great space holders, and being great leaders with women as well is a major thing, because the philosophy is we're meant to co-lead with each other, not just other men, but with women as well. So the old round table, the fable of the round tables of leading together, the mm-hmm. divine masculine and feminine, you know, even if it's a male that is in his divine feminine, fine, but co-leading together for the betterment of everybody.
Well, wow, this is exciting.
Thank you.
It feels organic. It feels authentic. It feels like the story as you share it, as I'm reading about it in the book. I'm not finished yet, so happy to hear about what's coming that I get to read. It feels like there's a journey, and also that you wouldn't be here if you hadn't been there. Does that make sense?
Correct. Yes. That's how I feel.
So you're helping inform people that maybe like where they are is where they have to be for where they're going too, right?
And that was my biggest question. A lot of my experiences came from a lot of questions. You know, what's over there? What is that experience like? What does this mean? Why are we where we are in humanity at this time? Why are we not more loving? Why is there so much division? Why is there so much, you name it? And over time, I started getting those answers. And for men specifically, I realized we don't have a lot of templates, meaning there aren't a lot of relationships we can look around in the world, even within our own circles, where we see healthy relationships. And that bothered me. And so I started asking, well, what are the templates? And as I prayed on it, I quickly got, you know, Yeshua or Jesus and Magdalene. There's a whole story with them that I'm sure a lot of people know about and don't know about, but they were a template of a divine union. I started to get Akhenaten, an Egyptian pharaoh, and Nefertiti, and they worked together and they were there to evolve their people at their time. And after him was King Arthur and Guinevere. They weren't just fables, these were all real people, and they were a template. And I thought that it was really sad that we can't look around. And again, it's not just in heterosexual relationships, but in all relationships. How many people do you see holding hands anymore? How much, you know, we don't see the lovebirds like we did, you know, from the 50s and 60s movies. Now, granted, it's Hollywood, but where is the love? Where are the templates? And so I realize there's a lack of men in healing spaces. We lack templates. Whether we have fathers or not, if we could have toxic fathers, you know. So what is the new template? And my job is to lead the group, but we all speak. Each group creates what the template is for them, for whatever job they have, for whatever their upbringing was, culturally, spiritually, religiously. It's them resetting their own template by getting some of the old programming, whether that's a sexual misery program with porn or you know, a predator mindset into a protector mindset, you know. We have to like kind of deprogram what culture our different cultures teach us and find that new template. And I could only find three divine couples so far that have resonated with me. And we got to retemplate in order to move with this evolution that is happening spiritually on the earth right now.
That's great. I like it. I like it. Earlier you were saying about connecting with our intuition. It's hard, or listening to the earth or whatever it was that you were saying, and then you said it's hard. Well, what you're talking about now sounds hard, but it reminds me of what I was thinking when you said that. It's hard because we haven't done it in a while, or we haven't talked about it. We don't allow for it. It's not part of our culture. But you're bringing it into the conversation in a whole different, new, wonderful way. Doesn't have to be hard, maybe.
It doesn't have to be hard, but it is hard to deprogram yourself. You know, because I'm not talking just American culture. I'm talking like, you know, I mean, you think about it, all over the world, people have their own programming culturally, you know. You know, for men, some are taught to run ahead and open the door. Some men in different cultures are told you have the door open for you. You know, it's so vast, but there is a general template that I think we have to find. And what I've noticed is we actually need to exalt the feminine, and that includes Mother Earth, you know, because she provides so much for us. And you don't, if you can provide for the feminine, you don't have to be in survival mode. It actually, you have to adapt. And then you start to see so many things of like, oh my gosh, I can build a shelter anywhere. I can find food anywhere now because I listened. So why it's important is, again, the world is evolving. We see society evolving and with technology. And yes, that's going to happen. And yes, we can keep a finger on it. But spiritually, there's been a huge separation. And I really, from my observation, the people that seem the happiest are the ones that are living closer to nature. And even though I live in LA right now, I will not be here forever, or I will spend only but so much time here because I am always happier and calmer in nature. And that is one of the biggest observations over the last decade.
I'm listening to you and you're telling all this stuff, and I'm thinking, boy, he's come a long way from the person that wrote, I was going to write this book anonymously. I'm proud
I
of you.
was. Thank you. I mean, I talk about angels and demons and ETs and stuff too. So some of that, the world's had enough. But I kind of my objective, because I didn't want to call myself a spiritual guide, but that's what I am. I have to step into, I've been stepping into that because I have spent years, a decade of my life really living anything that I say. And I didn't want to write about it because I spoke the truth, but I ground everything that I've learned so that it's not so out there. And I'm finally at that place where you don't have, anybody who reads it, you don't have to believe me. I'm not here to try to say that this is all truth. This is just my truth and my experience. And from what I found, there are, tens of thousands and hundreds of other thousands of people that have had somewhat similar experiences. So here's another story.
Here's
That's why I
another
look at it
story.
now.
And here's
Here's
another
another
book. Follow
one.
your
Here's another
vision, live your truth. Seth Stewart is our guest, and his academy is a True Kings Academy. A
Yes.
and you can find him at I Am Seth Stewart. That's the Stewart version of Stewart. And you can also, well, on Instagram, that's his website, right? Anywhere else?
Correct. Yes,
True
that's
Kings
it.
Academy, maybe
And
on Instagram.
truekingsacademy.com and
Yeah.
on Instagram.
We have his socials and his website on our page if you forget and want to find him and a video of him at the Life Changes Show page. Seth, what a great time together. And thank you for sharing and thank you for being where you are.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and for your show. Again, if you don't know who Filippo is, you better look him up because I am honored just from all the your own journey. I was like a presidential award.
We'll have to talk.
We'll talk.
Looking forward to more, Seth. All the best to
Thank you
you.
so
Thank
much.
you so much. You're very welcome. Our pleasure. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Marianne, and I really need your advice. As you know, I just had my 60th birthday. I have met a wonderful man who has changed my life. He says I am his twin flame, and we are having an absolutely amazing time together. However, what concerns me is that he's only 40 years old, and I'm afraid that he will get tired of me as I get older. Should I break up with him now because of our age difference?
Dear Marianne, it sounds like you have found someone who makes you feel alive, seen, and loved. That is no small thing. The joy you're describing, especially after 60, is precious. Many people go their whole lives without experiencing that kind of deep connection. Your concern about the age difference is completely natural. A 20-year gap can raise practical and emotional questions, but it doesn't automatically mean the relationship can't work. The key is how both of you handle the differences in life, your priorities, and long-term goals. Age isn't as important as whether you both bring maturity, honesty, and emotional depth to the relationship. If he treats you as an equal, and you both support each other's growth, that is a great sign. And please, dear Marianne, instead of making a decision out of fear, consider sharing your worries with him. His response will tell you a lot about his intention and emotional readiness. Twin flame connections can feel electric, but what really matters is how he shows up day to day through respect, reliability, and care. People of any age can fall out of love or grow apart, but they can also grow closer. If the relationship feels authentic and balanced right now, you don't need to break it off preemptively. See how it folds naturally. The more you mature and nurture your own sense of worth, health, and joy, the less power fear will have over you. You deserve to love and be loved fully, regardless of age.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
For our performance segment, we are featuring another Broadway veteran, a performer, a singer-songwriter, an entertainer, and an all-around great guy, Raymond Patterson. Raymond, welcome to the Life Changes Show. Finally!
Hello, Filippo. I am deeply honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me here.
I say finally because I have been wanting to have this conversation for a while, and you've always been busy and you've always had things going, and you were going to finish this record and then we'll do it, or let me finish this next project and then we'll talk. Well, and here we are, and still you've got projects to go and all that stuff. And that's okay, because we're always in the middle of something, aren't we?
It's life is ever evolving, and always we're on this journey.
And speaking of journey, I have to say one of the things that I really wanted to bring out in this conversation, because I've known you a long time and gotten to perform with you on stage. I've gotten to hear a lot of stories about you, and we've always had a great time. You've always kept it positive, always, no matter what was going on. And then when I would find out some of the things that were going on, I don't know how I found out, but it's like, how could you keep it positive?
Well, first I have to thank you, Filippo. I treasure the times that I've known you, performed with you, and even been in your invaluable company. I've had some major challenges over the course of my life and my career and my existence in this plane. With life, it's years ago when I was in college, I took psychology, and the statement that sticks with me to this day is peak personality. You go up and you go down. You have highs and you have lows. And I've had incredible highs and I've had incredible lows. And I'll first say that, I'm greatly honored that I've had a trajectory of, opportunity in my life with a career span that I have. The challenges that I've had in particular, I lost first my father, several years ago. My older brother, he committed suicide. And 3 years after that, my younger brother, 20 minutes after I spoke with him on the phone, when he was at my mother's house visiting, he complained of a headache and he died of an aneurysm afterwards. That kind of loss takes a toll on you. And then unfortunately, my dear mother, she lasted until 92 years, but she fought the fight and had a wonderful career of 42 years with the federal government. And she got into her home, which was a major goal of hers after divorce. And when dementia started to occur, I was caring for her during the pandemic, long distance from Los Angeles, and she lived in Maryland. And fortunately, I found out about an agency that, could give caretakers. And I had to wind up actually working with two different agencies. And I had an angel of a next door neighbor to my mother who helped me on a day-to-day basis, who happened to have been a good friend of my mother's. Helped me to navigate that difficult trajectory over the course of her decline.
And she was your best friend, so that complicates it even more to have her.
Oh, leave. Yeah. She always supported me in everything I did. She never graduated college. In fact, no one in my immediate family graduated college. I was the first. And she was always proud of the accomplishments I had. And I shared so much with her, taking her on trips. And she would come to Broadway and see me. And even on tour, I would fly her in. So I shared my life with this woman who, grew up in a rural community. And she just was so inspiring, so full of joy, full of hope. And I think that gave me a very strong foundation of belief and faith. She was deeply religious, but not dogmatic about it. She just, in her own way, was very spiritual, and she passed it on to me and through me. And that's the thing that's also helped me to live my life as I've done.
Raymond, I know you're very private, so thank you for having shared that. I'm actually impressed you went into all of that. We're gonna, since this is the performance segment, we're gonna listen to you perform in a little bit. But there's so many things we could talk about, and so much of it fun, and hard, and oh my gosh. I just let's take, because you mentioned you went to college and you were the first to graduate, and congratulations in your family. Let me just, could you give a 30 seconds on, you didn't graduate to become a singer, did you?
No, I did. Well, you know what? I have to actually preface this. I was in a singing group in my junior high school, and I was salutatorian in my high school class. And because of being in the singing group, I wanted to keep the group together as long as possible. So I had options and opportunities to go to different universities. I chose the University of Maryland at College Park because it was closer to where everyone else lived to keep the group together. Unfortunately, after several years, we broke up. Still had the dream in my heart, and I auditioned for a production of Jesus Christ Superstar at my university. Final year before graduating, I got the title role of Jesus. And then from there, I auditioned for the revival of Hair on Broadway, and I commuted up to New York several times during the time of final exams, Jesus Christ Superstar. And then, going up for callbacks, and I was cast. And right after graduation, less than a month later, I was making my Broadway debut.
Okay, we'll get into that in just a moment. But what was your degree in college?
I was in I had a major in broadcasting and a minor in business.
And there it is. Okay, so let's get into
I was aspiring to be a broadcaster, believe it or not.
You wanted my job, and I wanted yours.
Yes.
So you mentioned Jesus Christ Superstar, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But before we do, let's hear a song. So we're going to hear, this is one of the projects that you were working on, I think one of the first times I said, let's be on the show. And so we're going to play first, Foolproof. Anything you want to say about that before we play it?
Well, this song I co-wrote with actually, the gentleman, Bruce Automatic Vandiver, he was a producer at Sony. I met him and we collaborated. And this was actually one of the latter songs that we did together. And we wrote the mu he wrote the music, I wrote the lyrics on this. And I had part of creating the melody of it as well. And I hope you enjoy it.
And here he is, Raymond Patterson, otherwise known as Ray Ray, and his song Foolproof, here pre-recorded here on the Life Changer Show.
The many reasons for love to last are faith, hope, trust, and honesty. And when they don't work, no love can last. And then you fight to get out. But I believe if we give our all, we can stand the test of time. Don't give in to repeating silly games, 'cause you'll only lose. It'll be a hopeless crime. Because I'm foolproof from lessons learned in my youth. And now that it's a new day, don't throw at me the same blame.
I grow with what comes to be. But I believe in the strength of love. It can carry us away. Just don't lose sight of what's ahead, because we can win. It's in what you do and say. Because I'm through from lessons learned in my youth, and now that it's a new day, don't throw at me the same thing.
All right, Ray Ray, Raymond Patterson. Find him at raymondpatterson.net. And on the net, we have links for him at the Life Changes Show page. Raymond, I told you, we've talked about this a couple times, and I'm not letting it go. We're going to talk about Jesus Christ Superstar, because I literally, after we last talked about this, I literally went and asked ChatGPT, or not ChatGPT. I did a couple different searches. Okay. Who was the first black man to portray Jesus on stage? Okay. And this is what, this is, you're laughing, but I'm telling you. So it said that the first black man to play Jesus on stage in America was Ben Vereen. No, he wasn't. He played Judas in the original Broadway production of Jesus Christ Superstar. That's great, in 1971, but it's not what I asked. Then it goes on to say the first black man to play Jesus in a major production was Carl Anderson. No, he wasn't. Did a great job as Judas in the film adaptation of Jesus Christ Superstar in 1973. So I say the first black man to ever portray Jesus in a musical on stage in America, and maybe even the whole world, is Raymond Patterson.
I don't know my history on this, but
you're gonna find out. Yeah, we're all gonna know.
This in 1977, my final year at school. It was record breaking. I wasn't even in the theater department, which was breaking precedent. It was in Maryland, and I had a white Judas and a white Mary Magdalene, and it was an incredibly received production. We actually recorded a double live album, which had never been done before, and it got me going on the trajectory of pursuing entertainment as my life and my vocation.
Now, then you understudied Jesus, and then actually did Jesus on the national tour, right?
On the Broadway National Tour. Yeah. In fact, it was the Broadway National Tour that starred the late Carl Anderson, who was Judas in the movie. Right. And he also had done it on Broadway. And also the rock singer from Skid Row, Sebastian Bach. And after, unfortunately, they fired Sebastian Bach, suddenly I was ushered into my first performance with half hour's notice. And the producer had the premonition that things were not going to work out with him. Some weeks earlier, they fit me for a dreadlock wig. I think we were in New Orleans on tour. And with half hour's notice, I went on stage with the glowing support of my cast and performed Jesus And then from there, I did several cities afterwards with Carl Anderson as Judas.
Wow. That's like, wow. That's like, wow. And then with the same kind of half hour before situation on the good side, where you're told you're going on, then you're also told take off the wig. You're not doing it right in this city.
Yeah. It that happened when we were in Boston. I'd gotten great notices, and it was just a great experience. But it wasn't done for any reasons concerning my talent. No. I think because we were hitting, some cities and areas that it might have been a little difficult to accept the fact that, Mary Magdalene was of Latin American descent. Judas was African American, and then to also have a Jesus African American for this major production might have, anyway, I'll just say that.
And sign then, of the times.
Yeah. But the producer, was wonderful, and I understood why. And they brought in a wonderful performer named Eric Kunze, and he and I are dear friends, and we worked before as well. And later in that same tour, I was also understudy for Pontius Pilate, and I contractually did Pontius Pilate in the show for the last 8 or 9 months of the show. So Jesus Christ Superstar has been in my life all throughout.
And maybe it's not over yet.
I, you know what? I say never, never, never say never.
Well, and I'm saying I think we need to find out and let Wikipedia know who was the first. And Raymond Patterson, and you heard it here first. So with that, Raymond, there's so much we could talk about and so many things that you've done. I get to like see you on TV. It's like, oh, there's Raymond on this show or that show or that rerun or something. And you're in commercials and this and that, and I have to say, before we go on to this next song, much like I started this whole conversation, is you've been in the business for a long time. You've watched it change, and you've done it from many sides, from the stage to the small screen, the big screen, and you still and it's changed on you, and for better and for worse, and you've still kept it positive. You as far as I could tell, never have anything bad to say about anybody, and you just do your thing, and I have to hand it to you. When I said that to you, you mentioned your mom. You also mentioned yoga. You said yoga helps.
Yeah. I practice yoga. I think it's, yoga means a union of mind and body. And I have to tell you, years ago when I incorporated yoga into my practice, it really freed up so much in my body and my mind, and I approach things much more relaxed. Of course, as I said before, I have a deep sense of spirituality about things. And with your earlier guest, mentioning about nature, I connect to nature. Nature fuels me as well, and I just approach my day to day from a place of gratitude, and all else will follow.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And so much has followed for you, and I know you've supported a lot of people along the way, and thank you for that and who you are. And I look forward to more fun times and more good music from our friend Raymond Patterson. Let's hear this next song. Anything you want to say before before we play
yes,
Jet
actually,
Lag?
This is, thank you. This is the first collaboration that I did. I have to give a little bit of background on this song.
Okay.
I wrote this song with the incredible jazz composer Kirk Nurock in New York City when I was working in Hair, on the revival of Hair on Broadway. And he wrote it as a jazz melody. And through the years, it had been recorded by a jazz vocalist in a very different style. And I wrote the lyrics to it. And later, decades later, in fact, I worked with Bruce Automatic Van Devere. He heard the song and he had an epiphany about what he could do with it musically. And this is the result of our collaboration.
Fun. Okay. Well, here it is. Jetlag, pre-recorded by our guest, Raymond Patterson, on the Life Changes Show.
So you're not feeling too good, or too bad, a jet lag. You want to settle down till you can clean your act into the spirit. Say that you're feeling so strange, a jet lag, or too bad. You try to get yourself in gear to make the most of life you're missing. You run away, the wind is shallow and the space is getting tighter as you try to breathe and go for air. Then everything has got you feeling different when you look and you discover that I got some new way. You've been on a bum ride all day. You're out, too far. Jet lag has made you function in the zone of space in the twilight. So now you're down on low vibes. You twist inside. Jet lag has made you wander in the zone that's racing for the nightlife. You're moving motivation, slow the clock, it's not gonna fall, the time's going every which way but right. Then all is in perspective when you look into the mirror and it shows you jet lag's not the same. Some of the problem is cool things out. Slow down. Jet lag will get into your system and throw you about the seizures. Now that you know you can't hide, prepare to ride. You gotta get it, you know you need it. You're curious how you hang your balance before you lose it. It haunts you down because you feel it somewhere it's out there. You're with it now. Jet lag's got you spinning off. 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 Jet lag's got you spinning all around. Jet lag. You want to settle down till you can clean your act into the spirit. Say that you're feeling so strange. A jet lag. Too bad. You try to get yourself in gear to make the most of life you're missing. You run away, the wind is shallow and the space is getting tighter as you try to breathe and go for air. Then all is in perspective when you look into the mirror and it shows you jet lag's not the same. The sum of the problem is cool things out. Slow down. Jet lag will get into your system and throw you about the seizures. Now that you know you can't hide, prepare to ride. You gotta get it, you know you need it. You're curious how you hang your balance before you lose it. It haunts you down because you feel it somewhere it's out there. You're with it now. Jet lag's got you spinning off. 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 Jet lag's got you spinning all around.
All right, Ray Ray, Raymond Patterson. That's so much fun. Go to Raymond Patterson, just like it sounds, P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N, .net, and learn more about him. His music is also available on a couple different networks. Do we have the links for that? We should.
Yeah, I think you have it mentioned, Bandcamp. Yeah.
Okay, good. So Bandcamp. Well, Raymond, what a pleasure. And like I said, finally, couldn't wait for this to happen. And here we are. I'm proud of you.
I thank you so much, Filippo. This has been an honor to be on your incredible show. And again, congratulations to you on all of your major accomplishments. You're an incredible person, and I'm grateful that I've been on your show.
Looking forward to more, Raymond. We'll talk soon. All the best to you.
Thank you, my friend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. With a big thank you to our performance guest, Raymond Patterson. And another big thank you to our interview guest, Seth Stewart. That is our show. On behalf of our whole family, and speaking of our whole family, today is literally our sound engineer, Kaylin Holmes' birthday. So a big thank you to Kaylin. A big thank you and happy birthday to Kaylin Holmes. And so on behalf of our whole family and our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Leger, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.